The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is Sam Livingston. For today's show, we're going to be doing something a little bit different with all of the activity going around right now at headquarters with the start of the college orientation for Armstrong College. Mr. Stephen Fleury has asked Richard and me to take today's show. Rather than having the two of us square off in a debate, we've decided to split the show into two halves. So I will take the first half, Richard will take the second half, and he's going to be talking about the latest news in Germany with the United States deciding to pull out troops from Germany, and a brief update on the German economy. Well, you couldn't have missed it this weekend, the death of Jeffrey Epstein. Later on in this segment, I will play a lengthier clip from Mr. Stephen Fleury's program titled The Disturbing Ties Between Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton. That was given on July 9th. And in this segment, I will just give you an update on what happened over the weekend. Obviously, Mr. Epstein is dead, and in every article it says apparently it was suicide. So everyone is wondering, how did this happen? Less than 2 weeks ago, Epstein had tried to kill himself. He was on suicide watch. And now the conspiracy theories are swirling on both sides of the aisle. Joe Scarborough at MSNBC, he tweeted this, "A guy who had information that would have destroyed rich and powerful men's lives ends up dead in his jail cell. How predictably Russian." So the Russians did it, according to Scarborough, and everyone on both sides has their suspicions on Twitter. The big trend over the weekend was hashtag Clinton body count. And then if you read a few articles, you'd see that Twitter was promoting the hashtag Trump body count. So both sides are blaming the others. Both sides, if you watched any of the mainstream media over the weekend, were saying, well, this prison, this is the Department of Justice, and it's Bill Barr's Department of Justice. Some even going as far as saying Bill Barr might have orchestrated this murder to protect President Trump. Now, I'm not going to get into all of these potential theories, but this is so suspicious. This is what the Attorney General Bill Barr said. "I was appalled to learn that Jeffrey Epstein was found dead early this morning from an apparent suicide while in federal custody. Mr. Epstein's death raises serious questions that must be answered. In addition to the FBI's investigation, I have consulted with the Inspector General, who is opening an investigation into the circumstances of Mr. Epstein's death." So we've got two investigations going on right now into this, one by the FBI, one by the Inspector General of the DOJ, and another one from the U.S. Bureau of Prisons. Now, the prison Epstein was in, that's run by the Department of Justice. This isn't a city prison or a state prison. And everyone's wondering, how was this allowed to happen? Epstein would bring a lot of high-profile people down with him. Mr. Stephen Fleury covered that in his show that we'll play for you a little later, about Bill Clinton flying on that plane with Epstein 27 times. And now we will never hear from Epstein. He'll never appear in a courtroom. He will never testify. And again, I'm not going to speculate, but how odd is this? And it'll be interesting to see what Barr's investigation uncovers. This was the day before Epstein's death on August 9th. This is from Reuters. "Court releases documents related to financier Jeffrey Epstein." So this was, again, Friday, August 9th. It starts, "A federal appeals court on Friday unsealed about 2,000 pages of documents related to Jeffrey Epstein, the U.S. financier facing charges of sex trafficking involving dozens of underage girls. And what's one of the findings within those 2,000 pages of documents? That Bill Clinton, the former president, visited Epstein's private island, and that Epstein put on a dinner for Bill Clinton. That private island down in the Caribbean. Now, obviously, this does not look good for the Clinton family. But, of course, all the media can focus on is the picture that President Trump took with Epstein 15 or 20 years ago. Here are some quotes from the New York Times about Epstein's death. This is August 11th, 2019. It's titled, "Before jail suicide, Jeffrey Epstein was left alone and not closely monitored. Jeffrey Epstein, the financier who apparently hanged himself in a federal jail in Manhattan, was supposed to have been checked by guards every 30 minutes, but that procedure was not being followed the night before he was found," a law enforcement official with knowledge of his detention said. In addition, the jail had transferred his cellmate and allowed Mr. Epstein to be housed alone in a cell just 2 weeks after he had been taken off suicide watch, a decision that also violated the jail's normal procedure, two officials said. So how strange. He's taken off suicide watch less than 2 weeks after he was put on it. He's supposed to be checked every 30 minutes. And when he's on suicide watch, he's supposed to be monitored 24/7. The guards who are supposed to be watching him aren't there. He's supposed to have a cellmate, and he's removed. Continuing on from the New York Times, the disclosures about apparent failures in Mr. Epstein's detention at the Metropolitan Correctional Center deepened questions about his apparent suicide and are very likely to be the focus of inquiries by the Justice Department and the FBI. Going on here, the Federal Bureau of Prisons has already come under intense criticism for not keeping Mr. Epstein under a suicide watch after he had been found in his cell on July 23rd with injuries that suggested he had tried to kill himself. The law enforcement official said that when the decision was made to remove Mr. Epstein from suicide watch, the jail informed the Justice Department that he would have a cellmate and that a guard would look into his cell every 30 minutes. But that was apparently not done. Senior law enforcement officials, members of Congress, and Mr. Epstein's accusers have all demanded answers about why he was not being more closely monitored. The former money manager was found semi-conscious 3 weeks ago in a shared cell with bruises on his neck after a judge denied him bail. He was placed on a 24-hour suicide watch and received daily psychiatric evaluations. But 6 days later, prison officials determined he was no longer a threat to his own life and put him in a cell in the special housing unit with another inmate. It is standard practice at the Metropolitan Correctional Center to place people who have been on suicide watch with a cellmate. But Mr. Epstein's cellmate was later moved out of the special housing unit, leaving him alone. Bureau of Prison officials said it is standard procedure for guards and special housing units to check on inmates every half hour. It remained unclear why that procedure was not followed in Mr. Epstein's case. And this article goes on to talk about how understaffed these prisons are, how many of the guards are working overtime, and that may be true. It is true in a lot of prisons around the United States, but how often is this allowed to happen? How often do you hear of someone in custody, especially someone that high profile, having this happen? How was this allowed to happen? And again, we'll see what Bill Barr's investigation uncovers. He said he was appalled that this was allowed to happen. This is a prison that is part of his Department of Justice, and he's shocked that this could happen within his prison, especially someone this high profile. I'd just like to conclude this segment with this point. This is from the American Thinker on August 11th. "Much has been written and will be written on the death of Jeffrey Epstein. Was it suicide? Was it murder? The only thing certain is that the man did not die of natural causes. the official finding will most likely be suicide. Even if this is actually the case, it still will fuel conspiracy theories. Rightfully so. The man already tried to commit suicide the week before, after which he was supposedly placed on suicide watch. Here's a very important point. Epstein was probably the most valuable human asset ever housed in the Manhattan Correctional Center, given the high-level people he could have implicated in his pedophilia escapades and brought down. You would think every precaution would have been made to keep him alive. And this concluding paragraph, trust in government and the agencies of government is already at an all-time low. The Department of Justice, the CIA, and the FBI have already discredited themselves by participation in the coup against President Trump. So whether Epstein's death was due to sinister acts by people in government or merely gross incompetence, the result will be the same. The public trust will continue to evaporate. This spells trouble for all of us. So again, we ask that question, will Bill Barr be able to straighten all of this out? There's definitely something fishy going on here about his death and the timing of all of this. And we've spoken on this show a lot about America's two-tiered justice system, one for liberals and one for conservatives. And what Bill Barr is trying to establish is what we've always had, equality under the law. Stop treating one group or class of people different than another. So will this be straightened out? And just a side here about what Mr. Gerald Fleury has said about Bill Barr and President Trump's control of his own government, and this may give some indication as to how Barr's investigation of Epstein's death will turn out. Perhaps we will actually learn the truth. And I'd just like to read some quotes here from Mr. Gerald Fleury's latest Trumpet cover article, Can President Trump Get Control of His Own Divided Government? And here, Mr. Fleury, he's talking about the members of the deep state coup that tried to overthrow President Trump. He says, the way these officials are evading their responsibilities and disdaining the law is extremely dangerous. It undermines the pillars of the rule of law and of freedom in this country. It is turning America into the sort of despotism that plagues dysfunctional nations all over the world. The media are supposed to help expose and constrain such abuses of power. And he goes on talking about how the media gave the Obama administration a free pass on so many of these things. Never called them out. And you remember all those Obama officials saying how proud they were that all 8 years they were scandal-free. It's just a lie after lie after lie. Mr. Fleury goes on to say, the radical left, which is essentially a satanic attack on this land, has grown in power. Now it seems half of the country accepts many of their lies. And he talks about America under attack, which explains what is going on here, what the spiritual dimension is to these events happening in the United States. How these lies have been foisted upon so many people and how people have just willingly gone along with it. He goes on later on in this article. He says, radio commentator Rush Limbaugh made this insightful statement last September regarding the way the radical left is treating President Trump. An obsession has gotten hold of these people. This is Rush Limbaugh. There's almost like a demonic possession that has come over these people. It's becoming increasingly difficult, nigh on impossible, to even describe, much less comprehend. Mr. Fleury writes, that is a fair description of what is prophesied in Revelation 12. There are numerous other prophecies about this event in your Bible, but how many people understand much of anything about the Bible today? These people were getting control of the government. Justice in the land was destroyed. Rule of law was twisted and perverted. People were losing faith in the government. If this trend had continued, it would have meant the end of our republic. Now, again, that's talking about the deep state. But you look at, again, like that two-tiered system of justice where people are losing faith in the Justice Department, Justice in the land was destroyed. The rule of law was twisted and perverted. And maybe through this Epstein case, there will be a brief restoration of trust in the Justice Department. Who knows? Maybe people will again look to it the way they used to under Bill Barr, or with Bill Barr at the helm there. Think about all those Obama cover-ups during the Clinton investigation. And now we're finally starting to get some answers there, thanks to William Barr. And I'll just conclude here with Mr. Fleury's article. But God was not ready for that. He was not ready for the land to be destroyed, for justice in the land to be destroyed. Mr. Fleury wrote, if this trend had continued, it would have meant the end of our republic. But God was not ready for that. He was going to save America along with Britain and the Jewish nation. However, this would be only temporarily unless they deeply repent. There is no evidence this is going to happen. Some ancient history that is actually prophecy reveals what God did. And you can read Mr. Fleury's article at thetrumpet.com. Again, that's titled, Can President Trump Get Control of His Own Divided Government? And to conclude this first half, I'll play that segment from Mr. Stephen Fleury's July 9th radio show, The Disturbing Ties Between Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton. And again, that was on July 9th. And then following that, we'll have a short break. And then Richard Palmer will conclude the show with some updates about the German economy and U.S. troops in Germany. Remember to email comments to td@kpcg.fm. And now we'll go into that segment from Mr. Stephen Fleury's July 9th radio show.
Well, I just want to continue on with something that we talked about for a little bit yesterday, this Jeffrey Epstein case, and just how strange it is in some ways that this is reemerging and making headlines. He was prosecuted back in the mid-2000s and basically just given a slap on the wrist, a ridiculous joke of a standard of justice, I guess you could say. And this was a time when, of course, the Democrat frontrunner was Hillary Clinton. Everyone thought that, well, after George W. Bush is out of office, then you've got Hillary Clinton lined up for the presidency. This was, of course, all before Barack Obama became the new sensation back in early 2008. In any event, he gets this slap on the wrist, and then the story made headlines again, as I said yesterday, in 2015, 2016, mostly from conservative sources. The major media just downplayed it or covered it up. Here again, Hillary Clinton, she was the front runner. And then now it comes out, and it looks like these prosecutors from the Southern District of New York, it looks like they're serious about going after this man. And, of course, he has all of those connections to Bill Clinton. There's quite a few in the major media that want to go back and point out that he had a relationship with Donald Trump years and years and years ago, which he did. I suppose it's a pretty select club, billionaires. And he did know Jeffrey Epstein and had some positive things to say about him before all of this came out in the mid-2000s. We'll come to that in just a second. But really, the more you look into this, the worse it makes Bill Clinton look. This was the announcement yesterday coming from the Southern District of New York about their indictment of Jeffrey Epstein. Clip one.
As alleged, Epstein also paid certain victims to recruit additional girls to be similarly abused. This allowed Epstein to create an ever-expanding web of new victims. This conduct, as alleged, went on for years, and it involved dozens of young girls, some as young as 14 years old at the time that they were allegedly abused. As alleged, Epstein was well aware that many of his victims were minors. And not surprisingly, many of the underage girls that Epstein allegedly victimized were particularly vulnerable to exploitation. The alleged behavior shocks the conscience. And while the charged conduct is from a number of years ago, it is still profoundly important to the many alleged victims, now young women. They deserve their day in court, and we are proud to be standing up for them by bringing this indictment. Combating sex trafficking and exploitation of children is a priority for this office and for the Department of Justice, as the sexual abuse of a minor can have devastating effects on victims, often lasting for years. That is why my office will not rest until perpetrators of these types of crimes are brought to justice. Victims' voices, including the many voices of Epstein's alleged victims, must be heard.
That's a U.S. prosecutor from the Southern District of New York. Some interesting comments, to say the least, talking about crimes from a number of years ago. And it makes you wonder why now these crimes that shock the conscience, as he said, and he got a slap on the wrist back in 2005, 2006. So why now? Why go the Southern District of New York? They've had it in for Donald Trump. So you wonder if something like that is motivating this, trying to maybe connect it to the president. But if you've been reading thetrumpet.com, you also know, as my father has said, that with this new administration, the Trump administration, and then you have now this new Attorney General, William Barr, they really are lifting the lid on so much corruption that was going on all through the Obama years. Corruption, well, not like the Epstein case specifically, but the fact that these kinds of things were covered up to protect Hillary Clinton, to protect billionaire Democrats. It went on. It was a matter of routine. And then you see what happened at the end of that administration, the Obama administration, and how many laws that they broke to go after Donald Trump. Conchita Sarnoff, she's an author who has been following this Epstein case, I think, for more than 10 years. She was on Fox News late last night. And listen to what she has to say about Bill Clinton's connection to Jeffrey Epstein. This is clip 6.
I have read too much information, and I have spoken to too many people on the inside. I actually attempted to interview Clinton, but he would not. He did not agree to do so. And I know from the pilot logs, and these are pilot logs that, you know, were written by different pilots and at different times, that Clinton went, he was a guest of Epstein's 27 times. Now you tell me, Doug Banz was also on the plane many times. Many of those times Clinton had his Secret Service with him, and many times he did not. Almost every time that Clinton's name is on the pilot logs, there are underage girls. There are initials, and there are names of many, many girls on that private plane. So you have to ask yourself, and this is what I asked myself, why would anyone, not only a former president, fly on a plane 27 times that did not belong to him?
27 times. It doesn't make the former president look very good. And it was all during that period in the early 2000s. And this man is now being prosecuted for crimes that, according to the U.S. attorney, shock the conscience. The Clinton campaign, or not the campaign, but Mr. Clinton's office, I guess, last night, released this statement saying President Clinton knows nothing about the terrible crimes Jeffrey Epstein pleaded guilty to in Florida some years ago and those with which he has been recently charged. That comes from the Clinton team. And, of course, the Clinton camp has also said, well, we were just on the Epstein plane 4 or 5 times. And in every case, the Secret Service was there with us, so everything was above board, everything was appropriate. But this woman, this author, who's gone through all the court filings 27 times, with Secret Service, without Secret Service, and in nearly every case, underage girls, teenagers, traveling along with Mr. Epstein, with the former president. Well, it was Donald Trump. And again, if it's hard to say exactly what all is motivating this, but it is interesting to just read some of these details, because if in fact it was an attempt to maybe reel Donald Trump into this, this little tidbit emerged yesterday on some blogs. This was back in 2016 when it was Sean Hannity who was asking Donald Trump about some of his opponents, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, on the other side of the political fence. And this was an exchange that the two of them had regarding Bill Clinton. Clip two.
Bill Clinton.
Nice guy. Got a lot of problems coming up, in my opinion, with the famous island with Jeffrey Epstein. A lot of problems.
That's Donald Trump hitting the nail right on the head. That was 2016. And he was saying Bill Clinton had a lot of problems coming up because of how close he was to Epstein. The Daily Caller had a piece. Now, as I say, Donald Trump also had a good relationship with Epstein and even had some favorable comments to say about him many, many, many years ago. But he certainly changed his tune when Epstein got involved in the sex trafficking with minors and in fact was prosecuted in the mid-2000s. But as I say, it was just a slap on the wrist. But this is from the Daily Caller. It says Bradley Edwards, a lawyer who represented Jeffrey Epstein's victims, stated in court documents that Trump had barred Epstein from his Mar-a-Lago estate because Epstein sexually assaulted an underage girl at the club. And so once that happened, he barred him, according to these court filings, he barred him from his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. It says neither Trump nor Mar-a-Lago have confirmed that Epstein had been banned from the club. Court filings, it says further on, obtained by Fox News show that Clinton traveled on Epstein's private plane, the Lolita Express, 26 times. That author, she says it's 27. It says on some of those trips, Clinton allegedly left without his Secret Service. He left his Secret Service behind and was traveling all over the world on the so-called Lolita Express, and I won't get into the detail of why it was nicknamed that. It doesn't look so good. And here again, you think about all of these connections and these cover-ups. You know all about the email server, Hillary Clinton. Here again, in the mid-2000s, she was the front runner. And all of this is pretty much covered up. Epstein was given a slap on the wrist, still able to go to his office, go to work, even when he was supposedly in prison for 13 months. And then you come up to 2015, or the years even immediately before that, and all of those emails, tens of thousands of them, her own server set up in her basement, violating every kind of rule at the State Department, breaking laws, scrubbing the server, and all of that just carefully covered up by the FBI, by the DOJ. And then the attack on the Trump campaign, Spygate.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Hello and welcome back to The Trumpet Daily radio show. This is no longer Sam Livingston standing in for Mr. Flurry, but Richard Palmer. We're tag-teaming it this morning on the TDR. If you're just joining us today, Sam just finished giving an update on the big American news of the weekend, the death of Jeffrey Epstein. He can cover U.S. politics much better than I can, so I'm glad he was able to get in there and do that first. There's been a whole lot of talk about that, and I think rightly so. But there are other important news stories going on over the weekend, not just Jeffrey Epstein. So I'm going to update you on a couple of those. I think Sam promised you an update on the German economy. Unfortunately, once I got started on some of these other stories, there's no more time to cover in my notes, or no more space in my notes to cover the German economy. But if you are a huge fan of German economic news and are really disappointed to hear that I won't be talking about it, I have good news for you. You can go and listen to our Trumpet Hour program. Our Friday edition of that is a wrap-up of all the big news from the week. And I talked about that subject there, and you can hear on that show a recap of all the big stories from last week from our panel of news watchers. But the key theme in the news I do want to cover today is about Europe and about Germany turning against the United States. Well, turning's not quite the right word here. There's always been a heavy strain of anti-Americanism in Europe. But right now that's being exposed, and it's really intensifying. One story that we'll get into in a minute is the Pope basically said that Donald Trump is Hitler. The Pope, the leader of the Catholic Church, he basically said that in not particularly subtle terms at all. But first I want to talk about a story that got a little more attention even than that one. On Friday, the U.S. ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, he threatened to pull American troops out of Germany. The U.S. has a really big contingent of soldiers over there in Germany. I think there's about 50,000 personnel, most of them troops, and then some civilian support staff there. And they've been stationed in Germany since World War II. Not the same soldiers, obviously, but otherwise they'd be very old soldiers. But there's an American presence there. And this story really exposes a big rift between the United States and Germany, something that we've really seen exposed ever since President Trump came into office. Because these soldiers, you know, what they've done for most of the time isn't occupy Germany or keep Germany down or have any real role within Germany, but instead to defend Germany. I think about a year or so ago, I did a show, for example, on the Berlin airlift, where American airmen really put forth a Herculean effort to defend West Berlin and keep it away from the Soviets, to help them survive a Soviet siege. So America's defense has done a lot for Germany. Throughout a lot of Germany's history, Germany hasn't had to pay for its defense the way it's had to in the past, because America took care of the lion's share of the German defense efforts. So Germany was able to basically just grow rich, to boost its economy. They've become one of the world's top economies and just this massive export powerhouse. And that's happened in large part because America's been taking care of the really expensive part of defending Germany. And especially then over the last few decades, they've been relying more and more on America and spending less and less themselves on their military. So NATO rules say that everybody in NATO has to spend at least 2% of their economy on their military, because you know, NATO, they're meant to be able to, or they're meant to help defend each other. And if you don't have much of a military, you're not going to be able to do that. But Germany hasn't been spending that 2%. They've been breaking that rule for a long, long time now. And so the result is you have Germany as this powerful economy, one of the world's top exporters, with these big social programs that America can't afford. And it's all essentially funded by the US. The US subsidizing Germany's defense. And then subsidizing all of these, basically subsidizing all of these social programs, with Germany spending their money there. So on Friday, the US threatened to pull these troops out unless Germany meets its NATO commitments. And a lot in Germany still don't want to spend more. There's a lot of opposition within Germany to spending more. They're basically saying, well, we don't want, why should we listen to Donald Trump? We don't like him anyway. We're not going to do what he says. There are others in Germany, though, that do want to spend more and see this as a good excuse to build up their own military. And pulling those troops out of Germany, you know, that may cause some other problems, and we'll talk about some of that later. But as I said, this whole issue exposes this growing, or this major rift between the US and Germany, where America's done a whole lot for Germany's defense, and Germany has just basically exploited that, but then still been very anti-American and just been unwilling to do its share, even its share of the work. I mean, even if it were paying its 2% to NATO or paying 2% on its military, America would still be doing most of the defending Germany and still be meeting a huge part of the cost of that. But they're not even kind of meeting that bare minimum. But then there's that second story that I mentioned that comes from the Pope, where he didn't mention the US by name, but he gave some not very subtle hints, saying that Donald Trump is basically Hitler. You know, he was condemning us first ideologies. You know, us first. Well, who is there around the world that says, well, us first? Well, Italy does. They have the Liga party there. They say Italia first. But of course, he knows that Donald Trump is there saying America first. So this comes from an interview he gave to La Stampa. They conducted the interview on last Tuesday, and then it was published, at least in their English edition, on Friday. And the Pope said, among a whole load of other things, he said, I am concerned because we hear speeches that resemble those of Hitler in 1934. Us first. We. These are frightening thoughts, he said. So anyone who says us first, according to the Pope, or anyone who says America first, well, they're like Hitler in 1934, according to Pope Francis. America magazine wrote, Pope Francis' remarks were read by observers in Rome as alluding also to the politics of U.S. President Donald Trump and his America First policies. So, well, like I said, he was talking about Europe as well when he made some of those statements, and some of those politicians in Europe that are bringing a similar message. But you put this alongside recent statements from very senior Catholic officials, Catholic bishops in the US, and you see the Catholic Church increasingly trying to paint Donald Trump as this evil Hitler-like figure, just following in the same trend that we've seen from the radical left, from the left-wing media. Now you've got, or increasingly you've got, the Catholic Church and other religious leaders painting Donald Trump as a racist, as some kind of Hitler-like figure. So, for example, you had the Archbishop of Washington, who came into office in May, Wilton Gregory. He's America's only black archbishop. And he came out a week or two ago saying that President Trump was diminishing our national life. He didn't come out and say directly President Trump is a racist, but that was the subtext of this long statement that he issued, where he talked about, you know, he's diminishing our national life, he's condemning black leaders, and he's sowing discord and division. That was basically the gist of what he was saying there. And then around the same time, you had a collection of different religious leaders in Baltimore, including the Catholic Archbishop William Laurie. They put out a statement So this was something signed to by the Catholic Archbishop over there in Baltimore, among others, and including the United Methodist Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And this was after Donald Trump, you know, he talked about Baltimore being a rat-infested dump and nobody would want to live there, and apparently saying this, even though a lot of people on the left have said pretty much exactly the same thing, apparently that is racist. And so these different churches, they said, or these different religious leaders, they said it was horrible, demeaning, and beneath the dignity of a political leader who should be encouraging us all to strive and work for a more civil, just, and compassionate society. They wrote, cities which bring together diverse races, languages, cultures, economic and social conditions are frequent targets for those who cannot or will not see their beauty through the eyes of God and in their inhabitants. To their detractors, cities are seen only through the lens of social evils such as poverty, crime, violence, and racism. To God, however, cities are seen primarily as vessels of hope, light of God's reign, and opportunities for living in blessed communities. So, you know, as I say, they said that it was horrible, demeaning, and beneath the dignity of a political leader to make those statements that President Trump made. And again, kind of just joining in with this liberal push that we've seen so much of over the last week, trying to paint President Trump as some kind of racist. Just this lie that you've seen repeated again and again by all of those presidential candidates that Mr. Flurry talked about a few times last week, including on Friday, where they've just been saying again and again, well, President Trump, he's a white supremacist, he's a racist. And increasingly, you're seeing Catholic and other religious leaders come on board with that. You had that perhaps most directly last week from the Catholic Archbishop Gustavo Garcia Silla of San Antonio, Texas. And he basically did, he really did come out. He told Donald Trump, stop hate and racism, starting with yourself. There were news stories last week saying, while other Catholic leaders have implied that President Trump is racist, this Archbishop is the first to come out and actually say it. He also tweeted, he said, President, you are a poor man, a very weak man. Stop damaging people, please. He said, President, stop your hatred. People in the U.S. deserve better. He then followed that tweet up with, please stop racism, please stop hate, please be people of goodwill, please stop fake prayer. You have caused too much damage already, you have destroyed people's lives, stop, 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 please, please, please. And then you also got the, like I said, other religious leaders, you've got the Episcopal Church, for example, that it really is moving more and more towards the Catholic Church. And they had a statement coming out of the Washington National Cathedral of the Episcopal Church where some of their leaders said, we feel compelled to ask after 2 years of President Trump's words and actions, when will Americans have enough? And so many of these statements would be shocking if they were coming from Democratic presidential candidates. If a Democratic presidential candidate tweeted, President, you are a poor man, a very weak man, stop damaging people. Or if someone like Joe Biden said, stop hate and President Trump, stop hate and racism, starting with yourself. But these aren't Democratic politicians that are saying that. I mean, even you just go back 5-10 years, and to have a Democratic politician saying the president is a racist would have been big news, would have been extreme. Now it's a Catholic leader, supposedly non-political, completely neutral, saying, well, President Trump, you are a racist. Now, I think the Catholic Church has to be careful here. When Mr. Trump was elected, 52% of white Catholics said they supported him, a majority. Meanwhile, the standing of the Catholic hierarchy has never really been lower in the U.S. because of all of the massive child abuse scandals and pedophilia scandals and all the things that they've been caught and exposed doing, and you've had a whole load of court cases exposing that. So I think they probably don't want to be too strong against him. And I think that's probably why this Archbishop, Gustavo Garcia Silla of San Antonio, I think that's probably why he issued a sort of non-apology later and deleted those tweets. He did say, well, he didn't say what he said was incorrect or wrong, but he said that he was wrong to focus on the individual the way that he did and talked a little about the office of the president needing respect. So he did kind of walk those back somewhat. And I think it's because so many Catholics support President Trump that They don't want to end up pushing away their own supporters, alienating their own supporters. So as this story goes on, I think especially from the US hierarchy, they'll probably try and be a little careful with what they say about President Trump for that reason. But still, it's just shocking. I mean, to have the Pope come out and to say, well, anybody who says our nation first is like Hitler is just, that's an extreme level of opposition to the US president and to America. I mean, that's right in line with what we've seen from the Pope before. He's talked about how capitalism is exploitative and exploiting the poor and is really, basically you listen to his rhetoric and he says capitalism is pretty much the root of all evil in this world. And that all suffering and wars, even, they come from arms merchants that want to make a profit, which is just a crazy theory that has no evidence. But anyway, that's exactly what he's been saying. The kind of things that you typically would just hear from radical left professors before now, and very rarely got any kind of mainstream exposure. He's been saying that. And of course, well, who's the number one capitalist country? It's the United States. And these have been, again, thinly veiled criticisms of the United States. But you're really seeing him step that up, I think, with some of his statements about President Trump and racism. And we've already seen the media in Europe take what the left-wing media in the US are saying about President Trump, amplify it, really run with it, and really use that to stir up anti-Americanism in Europe. And if you just look at some of the covers that Spiegel, Europe's largest news magazine, have had, on Spiegel, they've portrayed President Donald Trump as a middle finger to Europe, as a terrorist beheading Lady Liberty, as a subhuman ape. They've portrayed him as a baby riding a nuclear bomb, as a meteor about to destroy the planet, as a tsunami destroying Washington, D.C., as a golfer striking a flaming planet Earth. And you start to look at some of these covers and you get the impression they don't like President Trump very much. One Stern magazine cover showed, this is another prominent German news magazine, it showed Donald Trump as a Nazi. The Berlin Courier, another magazine, showed the whole world swearing at President Trump. One study found that Germany's public broadcaster, ARD, covers the German president more negatively than any other news source in the world. Even than, say, CNN and some of these other news stories. So the media over in Europe, is, and especially in Germany, is just, I mean, you think that we're pounded with that message, or you're pounded with that message in the US from CNN and MSNBC saying President Trump is a racist, President Trump is a Nazi, President Trump is Adolf Hitler. It's even worse in Germany. That's what they're just being pounded with repeatedly. And now you have even the Pope coming out and say, and implying President Trump is like Hitler. They're really stirring Europe against President Trump. And the left-wing media, they like to talk about complicity and conspiracies. And well, the left-wing media really is complicit in that. They, more than the European journalists, they should know the truth about what's happening in America. It's their country. They live there. The media in Europe should be reporting the truth as well. I don't want to let them off the hook, but the media in the US, they should know better. I mean, no wonder President Trump calls them enemies of the people. They're helping. They're playing a very direct role in stirring Europe again, or giving Europe, these European leaders, ammunition. They're making it very easy for anybody that doesn't like the US over in Europe to paint America as Nazi and Hitler's, because Yeah, they can tell the German people, just look at CNN, just look at MSNBC, look what they're saying. And so you're just seeing a big change in what's going ahead in Europe. In the year 2000, 80% of Germans said they felt favorable about the US. Now, that, I think, was a bit of a high point. It goes up and down, but 80%, but still, that wasn't necessarily unusual. 80% saying they felt favorable by the US. By 2015, that number had fallen to 50%. By spring of 2017, just 35%. And I haven't seen a more up-to-date figure of that. I imagine it would be even lower now. The same year, you had another poll saying that more Germans trusted Russia than the United States. And so you're seeing all of Europe really turning against the United States. Now, I could see some in America saying, well, so what? You know, Europe and whose army? Europe's not particularly strong. They rely on America for defense. Who cares if they turn against America? And I think there are a couple of important reasons, well, several important reasons to care. I mean, one is Europe is really economically a superpower already. They've got an economy that rivals, I think is even bigger by a whole load of different measurements than the United States. You've got Germany as this export powerhouse. You've got a country that does have lots of significant military capability. And if they bring that together, and they've got that already, that strong economic backbone that really is the foundation of military power, they could become military power very quickly. Yeah, they may not look all that powerful right now, but appearances can be deceiving, and that can change very fast. And the Pope is really pushing for unity as well. Going back to the same interview from last week, he said, Europe cannot and must not break apart. It is a historical, cultural, as well as geographical unity. The dream of the founding fathers, and by that he means the founding fathers of Europe, has substance because it was an implementation of this unity. Now we must not lose this heritage. This unity has weakened over the years, partly because of administration problems and internal disagreements, but it must be saved. After the elections, and he means the European elections, I hope that the process to relaunch it begins and continues without interruption. So he's there pushing for European unity. And you could see if America does follow through on its threat and pulls its troops from Germany, again, I can completely understand the rationale for doing that and why America or why Germany is pretty upset with what America or why America is upset with the way Germany just relies on America for its defense and doesn't pay anything. But at the same time, if all those troops come out of Germany, you could really see that potentially being a catalyst for Germany to say, well, we need to do more to defend ourselves. We need a much bigger army. We need to transform ourselves into a military power. So there are important reasons to care about this. Another is just the way that America depends on Europe. You know, it's one thing for, say, China or Russia to turn against the United States. They've never really been American allies. America hasn't really trusted them. Europe, they're kind of inside the tent. They're inside the camp. America views them as friends and allies. And even though there's all this anti-American rhetoric, they still view them that way. I mean, if you look at what America's trusted Europe with, these European powers have American nuclear bombs that America has lent them. They're on their bases. They've been sitting there for decades. They're not all that secure. They've had plenty of time to look at them. And they're basically nuclear powers because they have America's bombs. That's a huge amount of trust. And so, you know, to have somebody that you trust so much turn against you, well, you can ask Julius Caesar how that turned out. If somebody's within your camp, if you're trusting them, they don't even have to be all that powerful to take you down. And the Bible prophesied exactly this. Mr. Armstrong talks about this whole situation in the United States and Britain in prophecy. And there's so many scriptures that talk about America trusting these other powers and then these powers turning against America. It's a massive warning from the Bible. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 14, for example, God warns, all your lovers have forgotten you. They seek you not. So America had these lovers, these people that they really trusted, and they turn against them. In Ezekiel 16 and verse 33, God says to America, they give gifts to all whores, but you give gifts to your lovers and hire them, that they may come on side on you for every side for your whoredoms. In America, well, they've given away nuclear bombs. They give away massive gifts to Europe. God says, all your lovers have forgotten you. They seek you not. But God says, I have wounded you with the wounds of an enemy. In Ezekiel 16, God says, I will gather all your lovers whom you take pleasure. I will even gather you round about against you. So these lovers are turning against America, these allies, this European ally that America's trusted. But God says he is behind it. And that's important to remember because, these, like I said, these powers have the capability to really damage America. And the Bible says they will. But understanding that God is behind it is crucial. Crucial to having hope as we see this unfold. God explains in why in Ezekiel 23 Ezekiel 23 and verse 35, he said that Israel, and that includes the descendants of biblical Israel, Britain and America, have forgotten me and cast me behind their back. Britain and America have cast God behind their back, rejected him. We've not trusted in God for protection. We make up for that lack of protection by looking to foreign powers. America's foreign policy trusts in foreign nations, not in God. Mr. Armstrong talked about this. He quoted Matthew 22, that talks about you shall love your God with all your heart and soul and mind. And he said in a World Tomorrow broadcast in the 1980s, we violated that as a nation. Now, I don't think we realize we're doing it. I think we sincerely think we've kidded ourselves into thinking that we are really relying on God. But then, you know, we think that God is sort of a myth and he's far off, Mr. Armstrong writes. Maybe he's not real. Maybe he couldn't really help us. So we must depend on something that is real. We must depend on something we can see. And so now we're so afraid of Russia that the United States government feels like it must take what we call a calculated risk and try to build up Germany and Central Europe against Russia. So America's not wanted to depend on God. They're depending on the United States. But the only way Britain, the only way America can really prosper is by relying on God. That's the only way our nations can have long-term success. And God wants them to have long-term success. God wants us to have long-term success beyond anything that we can conceive or imagine. And so that's why he's using our allies and this trust in our allies from both Britain and America to punish us. He's behind them turning against Britain and America. He is allowing this hatred of America to build up in Europe. He's going to use that to correct America. And then once Britain and America, that we've learned this lesson, when we've learned to trust God, that is going to lead to unparalleled blessings. And you can read much more about that in our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Go to our website, thetrumpet.com. We're more than happy to send you a free print copy of that book. That is the book that really gives you foundation you need to understand world events, to really know what's happening in this world. It brings the Bible alive. It makes it so clear that it is a now book, a book for right now, a book for this world, a book for your life right now, a book to help you have hope in world events, a book that shows you that the Bible applies today and it has practical wisdom for us right now. So you can get that from our website, thetrumpet.com. I believe Mr. Stephen Fly will be back tomorrow. So please do tune in back then at kpcg.fm or 101.3 on the FM dial.